everyone. This is Belinda from the podcast Michael Jackson and the Truth. Yes, Michael Jackson and the Truth podcast. Today's date is August the 28th, 2023. And this is episode 26, Still A Lot On My Mind. In this episode, I will discuss a situation that bothered me. A trial will happen. Catherine is dealing with John Branca's nonsense again. Why is Taj blocking fans? And will the fans and family alike let the Presley / Cleos go for good? The best way to listen to this podcast is on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, among others, but not YouTube. Not iHeartRadio, not Audible, Dole, but those other places, yes. The website to the podcast is Michael and the Truth, or rather www.michaelandthetruthpodcast.blogspot.com. The best way to contact me is email, and the email is mjthetruthpodcast@outlook.com. mjthetruthpodcast@outlook.com. So the first topic we're going to talk about is regarding the late Clarence Advance. He passed away some 2 weeks ago. And from the article from the website mjvibe.com, it reads, Clarence Advance, former Motown chairman and bad tour promoter, dies at 92. He was also known as the Black Godfather of Black Music. Okay. Clarence Advance, who worked as an artist manager, mentor, executive, and record label owner, died Sunday at his home in Los Angeles. He was 92 years old. Clarence leaves behind a loving family and a sea of friends and associates that have changed the world and will continue to change the world for generations to come, a family said in a statement. The joy of his legacy eases the sorrow of our loss. As manager early on in his career, the North Carolina native worked with Sarah Vaughan, Freddie Hubbard, Little Willie John, Jimmy Smith, and producer Creed Taylor, among others. He went on to broker the sale of Sax Records in the 1960s and notably discovered and signed Ain't No Sunshine singer Bill Withers. In the 1970s, Advance founded KAGB-FM, Advance Garden Broadcasting, one of the first black-owned radio stations in the U.S. Advance's connection with the SOS Band sparked the introduction to emerging songwriting/production duo Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. Advance also played an instrumental role in the pair's success, as well as that of another hit-making duo, L.A. Reid and Babyface Edmonds, or Kenneth Babyface Edmonds. He was also the promoter of Michael Jackson's Bad Tour, Michael's first solo world tour. He was named Motown chairman in 1993, and 4 years later became the first African American to serve on the International Management Board for PolyGram. Advance was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2021, and in 2019 was honored by the Recording Academy with the Grammy Salute to Industry Icons Award. Over the decades, he has received the Thurgood Marshall Lifetime Achievement Award, an NAACP Image Hall of Fame Award, a BET Entrepreneur Award, and induction into the Hollywood Walk of Fame. In 2008, the Recording Academy honored Advance with its Trustees Award. And of course, the article says the condolences to his friends and family, and I concur. Condolences to his surviving family members, his children, Alex and Nicole. His daughter is married to the CEO of Netflix. Forgive me, I do not know his name, but there is a documentary on Netflix about Clarence Advance called "The Black Godfather of Black Music." The Godfather of Black Music. And I've been told it's a very good documentary. It goes right into his life and how he is connected to all these people. And it looks amazing. So if you want to know more about him, you can check it out. And there's another article I post on the show notes about him from the Associated Press. May he rest in peace. And again, my condolences to his family. He is now reunited with his wife, Jacqueline, who passed away a couple years ago. Okay, the next topic is my contact being stolen. So, I found out 3 weeks ago that a blog post that I did in 2016 is posted on YouTube. And I was shocked to notice that. Maybe not too shocked, but nonetheless, there's a video. And if you look at the show notes, I got the clip to the video or the the image of the video from YouTube, so you can see where it came from, who posted the video, how long it is, and the title. I did a blog post in 2016 to mark the 25th anniversary of the Dangerous album. And apparently this person in 2021 decided to do a video about those facts. Pretty much stole my stuff. And I didn't know that until 2 years later, this year, when I decided to watch the video and notice it sounded familiar. So I went to my blog to check it out, and lo and behold, that's what I saw. I listened to it, and it was almost the same thing. So I went to the comment section on YouTube, and I told this person to remove the video because it's stolen, of course. And I gave that person a week to do that. A week passed, they didn't remove the video, so I contacted them on Instagram, nothing happened with that, they didn't respond back. So I filed a copyright claim of a copyright infringement to YouTube. And before I did all that, I did some research on copyrights and stumbled upon the Fair Use Act. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to use these things and put it on my podcast and blog, so everybody would know about where I stand with this, and I'm sorry, where I stand with this, and when it comes to the Fair Use Act. And so that's what I decided to do. As for reporting this on YouTube, I decided to take it back because sorry, buddy, I got this cough. I decided to take it back because it will be time consuming. You have to get a lawyer, you have to show where the individual, the content creator, what parts of the blog or the web, the blog post, the content creator stole from, things of that nature. So I didn't really have the time to do all that, so I just let it go. Deep down, I did not want to, but I said, okay, you know, in the future, I'm so sorry, buddy. In the future, I'm going to have to find a way to let this not be a thing. The thing about the internet is you can't really stop people from taking things from you. Even though their intentions might be, I guess, pure, they're not going to credit you, and then they don't really understand that it's just because it's on the internet doesn't mean it's there, doesn't mean you have the right to do that. What this person did was very careless and very, in my opinion, very sinister. But this happens a lot in the fan communities, and they don't care. So I made a copyright statement that I want to read, that I want everybody to listen to, so that in the future, if anybody wants to use anything I put on my blog or on this podcast site, then they should know where I stand with this. So the statement states, please do not use any of my work without my permission. If you would like to use my work for your own personal, professional, or educational work, please contact me via email at mjthetruthpodcast@outlook.com. In the email, show me what blog post or post you want to use, how you will want to use them, and why you want to use them. If I approve of it, please give me the credit. Tell me and show me how my work was used for your work. Please do not post any of my work on YouTube. Please note that if my work is used without my permission, I will do everything in my power to get it removed. Thank you. So this is going to be posted on this, the show notes, and at times, well, it's also over the website too. Now, I'm going to also read the Fair Use Act statement. Now, the reason why I'm using the Fair Use, because I do use other people's work, other people's videos for commentary reasons, for educational reasons, and so even though, yes, I do credit those people, I'm still going to use the Fair Use Act statement So you know that why I'm originally using this content for, okay? This site slash podcast contains original content that may not be authorized for use by the creator. The podcaster, which is me, is legally using original content under the fair use principles. Here's the link to section 107 of the Copyright Act. So I posted the link on there in every description of this podcast, in every episode of the show notes. Whenever I use an article or a video as commentary to prove a point or whatever, I will post the fair use statement. Okay? Yes, I'll still give credit to where it originally came from, but I will still post a fair use statement so people would know why I'm using this stuff. I mean, why I'm using this content, okay? So you see it, you will know what it's about. So don't be alarmed by it. And if you have any questions, you can always ask me. But for the meantime, if you see, you will see these things in every episode I do, because on most of the stuff I do, I have to use the content. All right. So it sucks, but what are you gonna do? I mean, in a perfect world, you will have people email you or contact you, whoever. For me, we email and just ask, hey, can I borrow this stuff? And you say, yeah, I had someone email me in the past and asked to borrow a video I posted on YouTube, some clips from. I said, sure, you can do that. They wanted to get the actual parts from the video to use it for something else, and I gave it to them. I emailed it to them, and all they did was ask permission, and that's all I asked. But now that after what just happened, I would prefer people just email me always. Don't just take it. Email me. All right, so the next topic is the trial will happen. So, as we all know, sometime to going on 2 weeks ago, this Friday, it was confirmed. It was reported, I should say, that they're going to try the deceased. And you would think that that couldn't happen. It's not, shouldn't happen. What's the point? But it is happening. The legal system is a very flawed system. We should know that, especially the American legal system. I can't speak for every other legal system in the world because I don't know. I only know the American one. American. I am American. So I only know what goes on in America. And it's frustrating, you know, when you watch a person like Michael go through this nonsense constantly. It seems like every 10 years or so. Because people want something. If you're an actual criminal, they're not doing all this. They would have handled this by now and moved on. But for some reason, they just want this guy to be labeled something he's not. And this trial is two fools that want money. Their cases were dismissed 11 times. And it's only because of monetary reasons. It's not because it's abuse happened. Their stories don't make sense. The movie was destroyed already. It's not only not believable, it's ridiculous. People hold on to, oh, well, Michael hang out with a lot of kids. That doesn't make you a child molester. Michael liked kids sleeping in his bedroom. Never did that. Never said that. He shared a bedroom. He did not let kids sleep in his bedroom. That's not true. Those kids were always with parents. So it's so much craziness, and these type of stories stick. They don't get challenged, or if they do get challenged, you think the media is going to tell you no? So two idiots who don't want to accept the fact they're losers want their case to be told. They want his money. They don't care about they don't care about victims, dissing victims, because they're not victims. Okay, they're opportunists who are broke men who want money, who are angry that Michael left them with nothing. Let's be honest. I mean, his family, his children, his nieces and nephews, his cousins will always have a job in the entertainment business, whether we agree with them being on there or not. It's built for them. These two fools had an opportunity to be in the entertainment business, and they blew it. That's whose fault? Their fault. Michael didn't do all this for them. Who are they? He did it for his family. He did it for himself because it's theirs. You earn what you work for. And it's obviously a racist thing. These are two white men who are accusing a black man of things that clearly didn't happen. And who's going to question these two men? They're not going to question them. White, to some people, white people tell the truth anyway. when they don't. They're some of the biggest liars. Majority of them are from this, are them. And these men can't keep their story straight, but they want us to believe in fiction. So the only website I'm getting this information from is from mjvibe.com. They're fair. Yes, is a fan account, a fan website, and you know I don't care about things like that, because when it comes to the MJ world, the mainstream media is not who I run to. They are not credible. They have never been credible. So I will always stick to fan accounts. And if people don't like that, don't listen to the podcast, because the media will never tell the truth on Michael Jackson. So I will not go to the Associated Press about something like this, or People, CNN. They're not telling the truth. So I go to people like websites like mjvibe.com. So let's read the article. I'm going to try not to react when I read it, because some of these things are ridiculous. But anyway, Roberson and Sechus lawsuits revived by California Appeals Court. We are all hoping for another outcome, but Friday, August the 18th, will be 2 weeks ago, a three-judge panel. Let me just stop right there. Let me read the sentence and then I'll tell you why I'm going to stop. From California Second District Court of Appeal found that the lawsuits of Wade Robeson and James C. Sharp should not be dismissed by a lower court, and that the men can validly claim that the two Jackson-owned corporations that were named as defendants in the cases had a responsibility to protect it. Let me stop there. I just how I was going to say. Yeah, there was a hearing in July, on July 26th, where they discussed this. The video is posted on the show notes so you can read it. Based on that video, they put all the information they could put on there. There was a lot of nonsense being talked. The lawyer for the estate did a good job defending Michael and clearly trying to get reason there. But the rest of them weren't trying to hear it. And then what I just read is the decision they made. I'm going to read this article and I'll read the statements from the judges and a statement from the lawyer for the estate of Michael Jackson. Okay. It's the second time the lawsuits brought by Robeson in 2013 and Sechus in 2014, the following year, have been brought back after dismissal. The court said a corporation that facilitates the sexual abuse of children by one of its employees is not excused from an affirmative duty to protect those children merely because it's solely owned by the perpetrator of the abuse. They added that it would be perverse to find no duty based on the corporate defendant having only one shareholder, and so we reverse the judgments entered in the corporate for the corporations. Jonathan Saint-Pierre, attorney for the Jackson estate, said they were disappointed. Two distinguished trial judges repeatedly dismissed these cases on numerous occasions over the last decade because the law required it. We remain fully confident that Michael is innocent, and these allegations, which are contrary to all credible evidence and independent corroboration, and which were only first made years after Michael's death by men motivated solely by money. Vince Vidali, the attorney for Robeson and Sechus, said in an email that they were pleased but not surprised that the court overturned the previous judge incorrect rulings of these cases in these cases, which were against California law and would have set a dangerous precedent to that endangered children throughout the state and country. We eagerly look forward to the trial on its merits. The judges did not rule on the truth of the allegations themselves. That would be a subject of the forthcoming trial in Los Angeles. We trust that the truth will ultimately prevail with Michael's vindication yet again, Cypress said on Friday the August 18th. One who will be happy about this is Dan Reed, who now has more material to film his second movie based on pure lies and branded as a documentary. The Michael Jackson fan community is up for a bumpy ride, but as always, we will all come together, support each other, help the estate where we can, voice the truth in any manner possible, because we know that Michael's innocent. We know these men are liars. These two men are liars. We know the truth. We know the facts. I know this is not what we were hoping for from the court. And if you're struggling with the court's case in this event, please make sure to reach out to your MJ family and friends. So, it's going to be a bumpy ride. And, I followed the MJ trial in 2005. It was difficult. It was crazy. It was 5 months of some nonsense. And, you know, yes, one of the accusers, the false accusers, testified in the trial. And not because he wanted to help a friend. He was subpoenaed to testify because Snedden brought in Tom Snedden, the DA of the Santa Barbara DBA, who has now passed on. Tom Snedden, who hated Michael's guts, he brought in the so-called pirate badaxe, and those pirate badaxe allegations were based on tabloid fodder. And because of that, Wade Robeson was called to testify to say that this didn't happen. That's why. He's not a star witness. He's not, they didn't need a star witness. The prosecution case was weak. It was dying. The jury already made up their minds about the case. So when people say, Robeson did all this, where he implies that he saved Michael from going to prison, it's comical. It's not true. There's no way he did that when that case was falling apart. Robeson is a pathological liar like Sechuk. He's a nobody who failed in life. And if you want to know the background information about all of these ridiculous cases, there is a podcast called Case of Innocence. You can listen on Apple, you can listen on Spotify, and I don't know if they're on YouTube. So the ruling basically stated the judgments are reversed and the causes are reprimanded to the trial court for further proceedings. Plaintiffs shall recover their costs on appeal from the judgment. The discovery orders and the sanctions order in the Robeson case are affirmed. Lily Chandler and Tabitha Rose Marks shall recover their costs. Defendants shall recover costs on appeal from the sanctions order. Okay, and those are the judges that said that. Of course, a statement from the Michael Jackson estate from Jonathan Stipeyer. You heard part of it in the article I read, so I'll read it in full. We are disappointed with the court's decision. Two distinguished trial judges repeatedly dismissed these cases on numerous occasions over the last decade because the law required it. We remain fully confident that Michael is innocent of these allegations, which are contrary to credible evidence and independent corroboration, and which were only first made years after Michael's death by men motivated solely by money. We trust that the truth will ultimately prevail with Michael's vindication yet again. Michael Jackson himself said, lies run sprints, but the truth run marathons. And he said this statement August 18th, which was on a Friday, 2 weeks ago, 2023. Now, I want to say that I say bring on the trial. The trial is going to expose him. Remember, Wade Robeson wanted to file these claims under seal. So, thinking that he would get a settlement, and he didn't get a settlement. And you look into the dismissal cases, Wade and James were caught in their lies. They were lying on Michael, especially Wade. I mean, there's a video called Lies of Leaving Neverland that destroyed this guy's story. I'm not worried about the trial. I say bring it on. Some people are worried about the trial, and I want to stress to people, like, you need to start thinking differently about how you view things now. Michael image have been sullied left and right. You gotta get used to this. I don't know what else to tell you. All this, you're worried about this, you're worried about that. Honestly, be more worried about what the jury is going to do, because we live in a time where logic, critical thinking is slowly going away, if not already gone. And you see it now. People don't even know the difference between a civil trial and a criminal trial. This trial is not going to determine if Michael harmed children. This trial is going to determine if whatever they say the trial is going to determine. Michael was already cleared of this in 2005. He's not capable of doing this stuff these crazy people are doing. You know they're ridiculous allegations. There's no way it happened. We have to believe in time travel. We have to believe Michael had time. First of all, we have to believe Michael's capable. That's number one. We have to believe that Michael had time. We have to believe everything Michael stood for is the complete opposite of when it comes to these two. We have to believe he hung out with these kids more than he hung out with, you know, his own family, you know, McCulloch, all of them. We have to believe that. We have to dismiss reality to believe their nonsense. In order to do that, we have to dismiss reality. You know, Michael had an ironclad alibi. He was too busy to be hanging around these lowlife scum. These people had their own families. Michael had his own life to live. So you have to believe these things. Now, a former court TV commentator named Dean Tong went on Facebook and said something that was interesting. I'm going to read you what he said. My post humorously I'm sorry, MJ posthumously by 15 years. I was the Court TV commentator at his trial on site in 2005 in Santa Maria. How can this happen? It happens because the people of the state of California couldn't convict him beyond a reasonable doubt. So let's try and bankrupt his estate, because now the credibility of his accusers magically returns and the legal burden of proof decreases to a preponderance of the evidence. Only in California. And someone did some digging on him and found out that the guy was a victim of false allegations. So he has a different point of view of how these things are done. So his comment was very interesting. And so the credibility of these accusers are going to be on display. Not just Michael's, how Michael operated would be on display. You know, Michael's going to have family that's going to defend him. You know, former employees, if they're not living, their children will be, you know, like, you know, they're probably going to contact Frank DeLeo's a widow and daughter and son. They're probably, because, you know, because of Sechuk. And then with Way Rosie, you got Brandy, you have Ziggy, you have Taj, who are witnesses. You're going to have people who worked with Mike over the years. Brad would be there, you know, Sundberg. You know, you're going to have Norma. You're going to have people that knew Michael and how he operated, who are still with us, thank God, who are going to defend his character, is going to defend how he operated. We all know Michael did never, ever hire children. He didn't play that. He didn't want people. He didn't want to, you know what I'm saying? He didn't hire kids. So they have to prove he did that. Sechuk has to prove that his company that didn't exist then hired him. Whereas Pepsi is going to, someone who represents Pepsi going to say, no, we hired James Sechuk to do this because Pepsi sponsored Michael's tour, Bachelor. Wade was an immigrant. He came originally from Australia with his mother and sister. They came to this country to work or stalk Michael Jackson. You take your pick. But how do you work if you are an immigrant and you came to this country legally and you want to work? You have to get a green card. Okay, you have to register. You have to apply for a green card. So you have to do it through an employer, right? So they had to become an employee to get the green card. That's the only reason, so you can work. It wasn't so he can, you know, be around this stupid boy when he was a boy then. No. I mean, he barely hung out with him, and his mother confirmed that in the document, in the court documents, you know, the dismissal, the cases that are not dismissed that they want to go and ignore. Those will be part of the evidence to destroy their credibility. So these people have to prove that stuff. Good luck trying. They're going to be in trouble. There's a lot of stuff. You know, Wade, and I talked about this in the last episode, Wade has a credibility issue. And Wade is a possible, leave it at that, okay? So I'm going to read you some of the stuff of people who knew him personally, who question, who have a, or people who know of him, people who know people who knew him personally. And it's not good. One of them made a post last week on Instagram, and he stated, I knew this douchebag very personally. Made dinners for gross him and his gross wife many times over. Don't believe a word he's trying to say about the R King of Pop. He's a liar and a thief. Made horrible financial decisions in Las Vegas and then trying to come up financially on someone who cannot defend himself. If you look up the witness record for the 2003 trial, he and I separated by one name, R. We both told the truth then, and now he decides to lie again and again. Get out of Hawaii, dude. Sir, you are a certified cunt. # Wade Robson sucks. Wade used to come, another person said, Wade used to come and dance with us at Alley Cat Studios with our dance company. He used to defend Michael and had nothing but great things to say about him when people asked about MJ. So he can miss you with those random lines, with these random lines now that MJ is gone. Oh, and he used to say, he said Mike MJ gave him some gloves and various other things from his videos. I say the family should sue to get those items back. # MJ forever. Let me stop right there. The family can't sue to get those items back because he sold them, Wade sold them to Julius Auctions. So it's under Julius Auctions. Can they get it from them? Maybe not. But no, they can't get it back. Okay, then she said, This is when we were kids and teenagers in the 1990s. Regardless, he never came off as if he was abused and definitely had no problem taking advantage of MJ's fame and constantly being around him. Seems to me, Wade got desperate after his career dried up to find any way to make some money. Now, of course, I mean, that's what failures do, right? They don't want to work. They want to live off somebody else's hard work. And another guy said, hashtag Leaving Neverland fans, Wade Robson had molested my best friend's little cousin while she was on his dance team in California. But yet, y'all want to report my best friend's Twitter account how he was exposing Wade Robson, aka hashtag Uncle Pervy, for molesting his little cousin. Y'all sick. Mm. And then another person said this on YouTube comment section when they were watching the video, Liza Leaving Neverland. What's really effed up is my best friend of 30 years actually knows Wade. He sexually abused one of her family members when she was 9. She's been trying to bring up charges for years, and I can't wait until people see what Wade is. We see that Wade is the actual pedophile. Now, the stuff I just read, you know, they're alleged. You know, I don't care about that because he's alleging stuff that, you know, didn't happen. So I'm not going to be really dwelling too much on is it true or not. I think it's true. And I stand by that. You know, and that's how they cover themselves. They use Michael to cover up their dirty ways. This podcast will not be following the trial, mainly because I didn't make the podcast to do stuff like this. I made a podcast to tell you about Michael's life and things of that nature. There is a YouTuber named Andy Sigmore. I mentioned him in the previous episode. He has a YouTube channel called The Popcorned Planet. He said himself he will be following the case. So my suggestion is to go and subscribe to his channel. Listen to what he's saying. He will probably interview some people in the trial. He did the same thing for the Johnny Depp thing trial. So he followed that case too. I hope this is on television. I want to check this out. I want to read it. I want to follow it myself. The results will be mentioned on the podcast. But every fan should look forward, not in a good way, not in entertainment, but for the sake of the truth. We all should just follow this case. Yes, this is a distraction. We know that. But we have to be concerned about 20, 30 years from now. Even though I don't believe, regardless of the results, that this means Michael did it. If the jury decides they believe these fools or not, didn't do it. I don't care what the jury thinks about him. He didn't do it. If the jury were logical thinking people, they would dismiss this case. These two men want his money. That's why they keep doing what they're doing. They don't care about his good name. They want something from this guy. So, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, you know how I feel about it. A lot of stuff. I will be following this trial. You should be doing the same. You should be checking out that podcast I mentioned earlier that will give updates on things like this. Follow the certain fans that do extensive research on this so you know what's going on. All right. The next topic is kind of related to this, but it's about an individual who had visited Neverland as a child in the 1990s. They posted their story on Reddit.com, and their name is CheesecakeOK2394. I'm going to read to you what this individual stated, and and I want you to listen to what this person said, because this person made some interesting points and relates to Michael's true character. I met Michael Jackson at his Neverland Ranch. Now, this person posted this 6 months ago. He also stated it includes edit in the end to answer PM questions. I'm not on Reddit, so I'm not familiar with that. I can ask my parents for the exact dates, but I went through this sub and I was shocked to see not many people here have ever met him or gone to the ranch, so I thought I'll share. My mom had made contact with him twice before we went to the ranch. She was part of a charity in California to help kids from low-income homes get easier access to food. She sent Michael and a few other celebrities letters over the years, hoping that some would donate a signed item to charity toward the charity, and none replied but Michael. He didn't write the letter back to her. It was typed by, but he signed it and included three signed promo photos to auction off. She responded with a thank you letter and a photo of some of the kids in the charity helped wearing thank you Michael shirts we made with puff paint. No response back from Michael after that for quite some time, and she figured that the conversation was done. She received a phone call months later from a woman who said Michael Jackson wanted to speak to Audrey Clemens, and could she come to the phone? My mom thought it was a prank, but she let it roll for a few minutes since he did respond to the letter before. The woman then transferred the call to a man who wasn't Michael, then another man who wasn't Michael, all of them confirming she was Audrey Clemens and telling her to hold please for Mr. Jackson. On the fourth transfer, she heard him. Hi, is this Audrey from Little Ones? She said she had him on speaker and the other two women in the office were going nuts saying it really is him. She said the conversation lasted all of 2 minutes tops, and it was basically him extending an invitation to a maximum of 35 kids she helps to enjoy the ranch. He said he'll be out of town during our visit, but he told her he did this for school field trips and children's clubs and charities all the time, and the ranch was free of charge. He told her he liked what the charity was doing, and he hoped the kids would enjoy themselves at the ranch. He told her to wait on the line, and someone would give her the info. 34 kids in total went, myself and my brother included. My mom did not want us to go since we weren't the kids that benefited from the charity, and she didn't want us taking any of those kids' spots. But only 32 of those kids were able to go see. But only 32 of those kids were able to go, so we made it in. We were given candy with the Neverland Ranch logo on it, like it was candy he had made just for the ranch. It was wild. Rides, movies, an actual movie theater. We never went into his house, and we were told when we got there that Mr. Jackson was not home. The place literally smelled like Disney World. Candy and popcorn and sweet smells, like cookies were being baked all day or something. A few hours in, we kept hearing kids saying they met Michael earlier that day, and we thought they were lying. There were buses full of kids from different schools and charities, and that they were all amused that these kids were bluffing to impress everyone around them. Our group lined up to get popcorn from this popcorn stand, and my mom was getting frustrated at some of the kids for acting up and not following the rules. They wouldn't stand still and started buzzing around like crazy. My brother and I both reached out to get the same cup of popcorn and started bickering and play slapping each other. Neither one of us were paying attention to our surroundings. We looked back, and there he is, not 10 feet from us. He had a blue long sleeve button up top with gold and black buttons on it. He didn't even dress like a normal person. He dressed like a royal even on his days off. Black slacks and the shoes. He really wore those shoes. Everyone was screaming and jumping up and down, and he thought it was hilarious. We were not permitted to bring a camera, so no, I don't have a photo with Michael Jackson, but my mom got very fussy and told all of us to get together in a line to shake his hand. I think she thought we behaved too badly and he'll be annoyed. And so she tried to reel us in. Everyone shook his hand, and when I got to him, I held my hand, and when he shook it, he said, is this your friend, pointing to my brother behind me? And I said, no, sir, that's my brother. And he said, you guys shouldn't fight. I saw you hitting each other. You guys should have fun. Don't hit. The way he said it, though, was not mean at all. Sort of like a kid telling his school chums to cool it. My brother was next and asked to hug him instead of a handshake. And Michael said, of course, no hesitation at all. He hugged him, and so did I and a handful of other kids. My mom told us to get back in line and say thank you, Michael, altogether for his kindness to us today. So we did. 34 kids yelling thank you Michael all at once. This guy was a grown adult with all the cash in the world, all the golden awards anyone could want, and these 34 kids with candy covered faces thanking him all at once seemed to make him the happiest I ever seen an adult before or since. I didn't have a long or deep conversation with Michael Jackson, nor can I say I knew him personally. I didn't stay over to his home. At his home, I was only a guest at an amusement park area for a few hours one day in the 1990s. But every time I see anyone online saying he was anything but kind, it makes my skin crawl. The guy seemed to be a giant kid, a giant multimillionaire, talented 12-year-old in a worn-out black leather suit. Leave him alone. Edit. Thanks for the awards. I got a couple of messages, so I'll just answer the questions here too. One user asked if I remember what he smelled like when I hugged him. No. Laughing out loud, no, I don't. At the point, I came up to just about his stomach, and all I can remember from it was that it was half a hug because other kids were hugging him at the same time. A hug piled up, laughing out loud. So I sort of put my arm around him and grabbed the belt loop on his pants for a couple of seconds. I do remember he tried to pull his hand on all of our heads, or he tried to put his hand on all of our heads though, like he wanted to pat us on the head. Kind of sweet, like my grandma used to do. The second question was, did he say anything to us? Not to me directly. He did ask the group in general if we were having fun. I remember one of the kids asking which ride was his favorite, but I was being pushed around while the other kids tried to get closer to him, so I didn't hear his whole answer. All I remember from it was because it goes real fast, you can race on it too. I have no idea which one he meant though. The entire exchange with him standing near a group was just a few minutes. He went to all the groups that day and said hi. He did have a guy walking behind him with an umbrella. I didn't notice that man until Mike had already left our group. He would run up to Michael and put the umbrella over his head while he walked. But the kids came up to him. The guy backed off and took the umbrella away. Michael wore a black hat like a fedora. Hold the time, I'm assuming, to keep the sun out of his face while the umbrella wasn't over him. Thanks for your interest in my story. Sorry to say the King and I didn't have more interesting exchange to report, but I do indeed cherish the memory. I am a casual fan of his music, but I am more of a fan of his humanitarian work now that I am old enough to appreciate it. So that was a very nice, thoughtful story he stated, and the link is on the show notes so you can read it for yourself. The next topic is Katherine Jackson versus John Branca. Now, here's what's going on. I'm going to read two links to the court documents from the website MarcoBarletta.com. Okay? It is regarding a petition, an objection. Katherine is a motion to, let me read it. Beneficiary Katherine Jackson objection to petition for order instruction executors and approving and or authorizing business transaction. Okay, and you check out the links that I posted on the show notes to read, get more information. Now, I'm going to read the basis of why this is happening. Let me give you a little backstory. There was a story out, and I think it is true, of the executors selling Michael's music catalog. Now remember, the Beatles catalog, as it's called, or Sony ATV, has already been sold to Sony. Michael's half was sold to Sony 8 years ago. So, I'm sorry, 7 years ago. Give me a minute, maps on my subject. 7 years ago, 2016. So, they sold it already. This is a different catalog. This is Michael's own music catalog, MJAC. Rumor has it, John Branca wants to sell it to Sony for $900 million. And Katherine's pretty much trying to stop it. That's probably what this is about. So I'm going to read to you what's going on. And then I'm going to read to you their response. And that's it. You can read the rest on your own, all right? Because you should. I will talk more about this in the near future. But this is more evidence that John Branca is fighting this man's mother, and it's at the point, it's just, all right, it's ridiculous. To the court, all parties and their attorneys of record, please take notice that on April 5th, 2023, at 9:30 a.m. in Department 86 of this court, located at 111 North Hill Street, Los Angeles, California, 90012, beneficiary Katherine Jackson, Ms. Jackson, by and through her attorney of record, shall move the court for an order to seal her objection. The objection to the petition for the order instructing executors in approving and/or authorizing business transaction, the petition filed by John Branca and John McClain, co-executors under the will of Michael Joseph Jackson, the co-executors, on November 16, 2022. The objection contains sensitive information regarding Ms. Jackson's family and private life. This motion seeks an order allowing Ms. Jackson to file the objection under seal, as public filing would lead to sensitive information being widely disseminated in the media. This motion is brought on the ground that the sealing order is required under the California Rules of Court Rule. because the fact established one, there exists an overriding interest in that overcomes the right of public access to the records. Two, the overriding interest supports sealing the record. Three, the substantial probability exists that the overriding interest will be prejudiced if the record is not sealed. Four, the proposed sealing is narrowly tailored. And five, no less restrictive means exist to achieve the overriding interest. Okay. Factual background. Momentum of points and authorities. Factual background. On November 16, 2022. The co-executives filed a petition with this court seeking authority to enter a proposed business transaction, the proposed transaction, on behalf of the estate. Ms. Jackson, as a beneficiary of the estate, has concurrently filed her objection to the petition in order to register her concerns with the proposed transaction. As this court is certainly aware, Michael is one of the most well-known celebrities on the planet. Even after his passing, everything related to Michael, including the estate, his family, remains a subject of intense media coverage and scrutiny. Okay, the Jackson family private matters, when available to the public, become widely circulated in tabloid magazines and other media outlets. Number two, argument. The court should permit Ms. Jackson to file the objection under seal under the CRC 2.55 and 2.550. Okay. Under the rule of court 2.550D, which is based on the standard enunciated by the Supreme Court, California Supreme Court of NBC Subdisciplinary versus Superior Court 1999, a court may seal the record if especially finds the facts that establish the following. There exists an overriding interest that overcomes the right to public access to the record. Two, the overriding interest supports the sealing of the record. Three, the substantial probability exists that the overriding interest will be prejudiced if the record is not sealed. Four, the proposed sealing is narrowly tailored. And five, no less restrictive means exist to achieve the overriding interest. All five factors present here, and Ms. Jackson should be permitted to file her objection under seal. B, Ms. Jackson's overriding interest overcome the right to public access to the objection. Ms. Jackson has multiple overriding interests here that overcome the public's right of access and warrant sealing of objection. First, Ms. Jackson's overriding right to privacy is guaranteed by the California Constitution. All people are by nature free and independent to have inalienable rights. Among these are pursuing and obtaining safety, happiness, and privacy. Okay. The court also recognizes overriding interests, including protection of those for whom disclosure would case embarrassment or intimidation so extreme that it would traumatize them. Sealing the objection is the only way to protect these critical interests from being trampled by public dispensation. C, the overriding interest supports sealing the objection. Ms. Jackson is 92 years old. Because her son's enduring celebrity in this country, anything even tangibly related to him is likely to end up posted on tabloid news sites and spread across the internet. Ms. Jackson's objection is related to a private family matter. The objection also refers to the financial circumstances of the proposed transaction, which are sensitive and not publicly known. Sealing the objection will allow Ms. Jackson to participate in probate process and register her concerns to the proposed transaction in peace. D. Ms. Jackson faces a substantial probability that her overriding interest will be prejudiced if the objection is not sealed. Absent a sealing order, Ms. Jackson would almost certainly suffer a serious invasion of her privacy, given the attention given to the estate. The Jackson family by the media and public is virtually certain that the confidential information in the petition pleadings would be widely disseminated if filed publicly, thereby prejudicing Ms. Jackson's interest in her own privacy rights. Sealing the objection is not the only way to ensure that Ms. Jackson's overriding privacy interest is protected. The proposed sealing is narrowly tailored as possible, and no less restrictive means exist to achieve overriding interest. Ms. Jackson's objection should be sealed in this entirely. No less restrictive means exist to protect her overriding privacy interest. The entire objection relates to Ms. Jackson's private family matters. It cannot simply have certain lines redacted. Further, the objection is of minimal value to the public, and such interest is outweighed by Ms. Jackson's overriding privacy interest. Because of these considerations, the objection should be sealed in full. conclusion for the foregoing reasons, Ms. Jackson respectfully requests that the court enter in order to seal her objection to the petition to protect her overriding privacy interests. Okay. Now here's the estate's response. Okay. Because they're weird. All right. Okay, the trial brief. The executor's trial brief regarding petition to order instructing executors at approving and or authorizing business transaction. Redacted briefs. This is the response from the executors. Petitioners John Branca, Branca and John McLean, the executors under the will of Michael Joseph Jackson, the estate, submit the following trial brief in support of the petition for order instructing executors and approving and or authorizing business transaction. In the petition, the executors seek the order to instruct in order instructing the executives regarding and approving. That's redacted. The proposed transaction in his will. Introduction in his will. Now, I'm going to be saying blank because in the documents itself, it is covered, redacted heavily. So if you see me stopping saying blank, that's because it's blocked, okay? So introduction, this will. Michael Jackson, Michael gave the executors blank. The executors have done so for the past 14 years with results far greater than any thought possible at the time of Michael's death. Indeed, when the executors were first granted powers, initially as a special administrator, the estate was teetering on the verge of collapse. With more than $400 million in debt that incorporated Michael's most significant assets and little to or no liquidity or means to service that debt. Through creative thinking, hard work, and business savvy, and of course, Michael's extraordinary creative legacy, the executives transformed the NJ business into a profitable enterprise. Blank. Time and time again, the executives have negotiated and entered into unprecedented business deals for the estate that have produced significant revenues for the estate and reminded the public that despite all the tabloid noise, Michael Jackson was the greatest entertainer of all time. All blank. But that's not the standard that applies here. Blank. That standard is easily met here. Number two, factual and procedural background. A. Michael's will and beneficiaries and the appointment of the executors. Michael died testate on June 25, 2009. Joint trial statement, uncontested issues and facts. Number one, he survived by his three children, and by his mother, Catherine Esther Jackson, Ms. Jackson. The sole beneficiary of Michael's estate in his introverse trust, the Michael Jackson Family Trust, Messrs. Branca and McLean are the co-trustees of the trust. The children, Ms. Jackson, and unnamed charities are beneficiaries under the trust. All blank. In August 3, 2009, the court admitted Michael's July 7, 2002 will to probate. The court appointed Messrs. Branca and McLean as executors under the will on November 10, 2009, with limited authority to administer the estate under the IAEA. On February 3, 2010, the court ordered that the executors are, among other things, authorized to continue to operate the Michael Jackson business, NJ business, as set forth by the petition of authority to continue operation of the syndicate's business, which was filed on January 22, 2010. Michael's will gives the executives the power to sell, exchange, or otherwise dispose of the estate's real personal property and broad discretion to invest the assets of estate, stating, I hereby give my executives full power of authority at any time or times to sell, lease, mortgage, pledge, exchange, or otherwise dispose of property, whether real or personal, compromising my estate, upon such terms as my executives shall have deemed best, to continue any business enterprises, to purchase assets from my estate, to continue enforce and pay insurance premiums, and for any of the foregoing purposes to execute, and deliver any instruments necessary or desirable, therefore. In addition, I give my executives full power to invest and reinvest the kind of investments, specifically
I skip a line. Reinvest the estate funds and assets in any kind of property, real, personal, mix, or every kind of investment, specifically including, but not by the way, limitation, corporate obligations of every kind of stocks, preferred or common, and interest in investments, trusts, and shares in investment companies, and any common trust fund administered by any corporate executive hereunder, which men of prudent discretion and intelligence inquire of their own accounts. The executive's longstanding success administration in the state. When the executives were first given authority as special administrators, the estate was in dire straits. It was saddled with more than $400 million in debt, and its income did not come close to covering the tens of millions of dollars in interest accruing annually to carry this debt. Whereas virtually all of Michael's prized real and intellectual property was pledged as collateral and at the risk of foreclosure. The incumbent assets include Michael's musical compositions, as well as the compositions of several other famous musicians held within MJAC. Michael's interest in Sony ATV catalog, which included, among other properties, hundreds of compositions of the Beatles and the Heminghurst residence where Miss Jackson was then living, and where Michael and many of his siblings had lived as children and young adults, which debt was in default. Despite desperate for creative opportunities to generate income and starve off foreclosures, the executives negotiated a unique deal to co-produce the film This Is It with A&G, using rehearsal footage from the farewell tour of the same name that Michael was preparing for when he passed. The executives negotiated extraordinary favorable terms for the estate, including entitlement to a large share of profits from the film. Ms. Jackson objected to the proposed transaction, culminating in August 21st, 2009 trial before this court. In his testimony at the trial, Mr. Branca explained that he was not proposing the deal because it was what Michael would have wanted. But Mr. Branca established to the court's satisfaction that the film was the best, if not only, option to generate income quickly, and that it was to the clear advantage of the estate and its beneficiaries. In granting the petition over Ms. Jackson's objection, the court commented, "There's a lot of hyperbole used about fire sales that no rush to get it going, but I don't know that I could have said it any better than Miss Louise Lodi's then counsel for the children. What alternative is there? There's no question that the This Is It deal was the right move for the estate and its beneficiary. This Is It is the highest grossing documentary/concert film of all time, and the income, public interest, and the representational boost they generated from the estate paved the way for the executives' many successes since." Yeah, like the Michael album. Okay, over the next 14 years, the executives successfully eliminated hundreds of millions of dollars in debt, restored the estate to its incompetent interest in Michael's catalog of music and recordings. By the end of 2016, the executives had paid in full all of the incompetence that existed at the time of Michael's death, provided support for the beneficiaries and Miss Jackson, and provided the beneficiaries financial security and freedom. And this whole thing is blank, so we can't see it. Blanky, blanky, blanky. Argument. The only beneficiary has filed an objection to this proposal transaction is Ms. Jackson. Moreover, Ms. Jackson's objection to the proposed transaction is an ordinary business transaction for which there is no urgency. Is entirely unfounded. Blank. Accordingly, the executives respectfully request that the court authorize and or approve the proposed transaction, instruct the executives to enter the proposed transaction and execute all documents necessary to do so. Order that, pursuant to the probate code section 1310, any appeal shall not stay the court's order to prevent injury or loss of the estate, its assets, and its beneficiaries. Ms. Jackson is not an interest party withstanding to object. Under probate code section 48, the meaning of interested person as it relates to particular persons may vary from time to time and shall be determined according to the particular purposes of and matter involved in proceeding. Section 48 allows the court to determine the sufficiency of the party's interest for the purposes of each proceeding conducted. Okay, and then they bring up a source to that. All right. Even if Miss Jackson had a standing, her objections have merit, Miss Jackson's objection should not trump the interests of the other beneficiaries. And then they bring up a source to a time when this happened. It's called in regards to the Rosa estate. One of five heirs opposed the sale of real property, and this was from back in 1947. Nevertheless, the court held that the sale was of real property could not be defeated on the sole ground that the sale would not be the advantage of or best interest of one heir only who opposes the sale. And then it applied a higher standard than the ordinary care of diligence standard that applies here. But even applying that standard, the proposed transaction should be allowed to proceed over Miss Jackson's objection because of opposition of the sole ground that the sales would not be for the best interest of some particular heir. It's not sufficient where the proposed transaction is advantageous to the other beneficiaries. And Miss Jackson's objections are also misplaced. And that's blank. Finally, the executives request that the court make a finding under the probate code section 1310B that the executives should proceed with the proposed transaction regardless of whether the court's order authorizing and or approving the transaction is appealed. Section 1310 allows the trial court to direct the exercise of the powers of the fiduciary as if no appeal were pending. All acts of the fiduciary pursuant of the direction of the court made under this subdivision are valid irrespective of the result of the appeal, and the appeal of the directions by the court under this subdivision shall not stay in these directions. The proposed transaction presents exactly the type of extraordinary circumstances justifying such finding under this section 1310B. Contrary to Ms. Jackson's unfounded assertion, the proposed transaction is not an ordinary business transaction. In conclusion, for foregoing reasons based on the testimony offered in this evidentiary hearing, the executives respectfully request that the court issue an order authorizing and or approving the proposed transaction, instructing the executive to enter into a proposed transaction and execute all documents necessary to do so, and finding that pursuant to probate code section 1310B, any appeal should not stay the court's order. So that is the argument that's going on there between Renka, the executives, and Miss Jackson. Of course, he would fight an elderly woman. Oh, reading all that stuff, man. You can read the rest of that with the rest of the links or updates, but it looks like they're going to go ahead and do that transaction, okay? So don't be surprised with news break. You know, when this trial's going on, you would think you're going to forget all about this. And maybe that's, they want to throw this trial out there as a distraction. Not saying the executives are, but just, isn't it ironic? So, keep that in mind. Another thing I noticed is that John Branca said something on Instagram we weren't expecting. He said, for your information, to all the fans, we hear you and we appreciate you. It's sad to report, as I have in the past, that the bad tour was not professionally filmed. If it were, I would be the first to vote for releasing it publicly. We have surged and we continue to surge, and in the meantime, we have to be content with what we have of the tour, since it was the greatest artistic and financial tour in history. Okay, you say so, Branca. But some people say, hold on, Doug. What you saying? Is John Branca supposedly fibbing? Fibbing is another word of lying. I don't want to say he is flat out lying because I don't know. So I say fibbing in quotes. Air quotes. So let's read on. So an MJ fan went to one of Brad Sumbug's seminars. And this is what she said. I went to the indie studio and asked where the bad tour footage was. Brad said there were plans to film it and sell it nationwide. Huh. The people hired to film it had traveled overseas to do it, but it was decided at the last minute it was too expensive to pay them, so it never happened. Okay. So, some fans brought up some information. They go, hold on, wait a minute. Branka, what you, why are you saying this? You know this is not 100% true, what you're saying. So, someone brought up a handwriting note Michael wrote to a guy named Pecky. And it said, the three-page handwriting, I'm not going to try to read Michael's handwriting, but no offense to Michael, but this is what the three-page handwriting written letter said. A three-page handwritten letter from Michael Jackson to William Pecky Jr., written on Capitol Tokyo Hotel sectionary, circa 1988. The letter is affectionately addressed to Pecky. Pecky was a cameraman operator on Jackson's film Moonwalker, Ultimate Production 1988. After Moonwalker, Pecky was asked to travel abroad with Jackson during the Bad Tour. Pecky rode to and from venues to capture the crowd's reaction to Jackson. It was during these rides that Pecky and Jackson talked at length, and one such conversation in Tokyo provoked this correspondence. The letter discusses Michael's goals for the film, encouragement to Pecky, reaction to conversations about racism, and Pecky's vision of the world. Okay, very interesting letter that Michael wrote. Then this image came up. My first real grading job was on the Michael Jackson Bad Tour 1988, directed by Patrick Kelly. I was an assistant test line operator at Visions located in Soho, London. As an assistant, I laced the film, loaded the film cleaner, and pressed the REC on the 1 VTR. I spent the time in between these duties and lots of my own time observing and learning the nuances of the industry.
Okay.
Visions had two senior telescene ops, Mark Bro and Luke Rainey, who were both particularly knowledgeable and were an invaluable part of my education. Just watching them grade, then asking questions at the right moment was a great way to learn. The concert was shot in a mixture of 33mm and 16mm film, and it seemed at times they were shooting film for fun. The crew filmed two nights out of the five Women's Stage gigs. Film was also fed from the earlier tour legs in Australia, Japan, and Europe. As an accompanying piece of the concert, an on-the-road documentary was also filmed at the same time. The concert was cut into four machine and one online edit suit, not offline. This was before Avid of FCP offline, so the alternative would have been No band-o-matic or 3x4 edit. As soon as the film came in from the lab, we would be transferring it, feed it to the footage on the two hungry edit suites. It is still the biggest music project I ever have been involved with in terms of volume and footage. We would load each negative film lab roll onto the Rank MK11 telescene machine and then set the counter to a known sync point on the film. So our LRT would be T10 hours, I guess. The sync point would be the start mark of the film leader. Interesting. We started out in Tokyo with a 1 beta cam and soon purchased a 35mm BL4 and a 16mm camera. Eventually, our crew grew to 5 and we shot miles of color negative and shows in Tokyo and Okasana. Moved on to Australia and more shows. I was his DP director until we came back to the US and regrouped for Europe. Several changes happened. I quit the show. A few of our original crew continued, but I departed. Miles of 35 negative shows, I guess. Interviews, moments with Michael or MJ, Michael. Some great stuff. Have no idea where it is now. Rather, certain entire UK shows will fill later. So, there you go. So, I don't know what John Brake is talking about. And also, earlier this month, they did a roundtable called King of Style that was posted on the official YouTube channel. Okay? So, I'm going to read an article from the MJ Vibe that talks about this. All right. Okay. Sorry, I was being I just got an important phone call, so I have to go back to that when I get a chance. I'm going to quickly read this article. Basically, actually, I'm not going to read the article. You can read it for yourself. But basically, it's the round table. It has all these people talking about it. In the round table was June Ambrose, John Branca, Michael Bush, and Michael's costume designer, Rochka Bergman, and stylist and editor of Vogue Italia. That's what she does. And a model and fashionista named Kamimin Chin Loi. I don't know. And they talk about Michael's impact in fashion. That video has reached 3.1 million views on YouTube. Useless. The next topic is Josh Jackson blocks fans. I find that unacceptable. Non-disclosure agreement for his project. Other MJ-related documentaries given updates. So, I'm going to read to you a series of tweets now posts because Twitter is now called X. That was posted over the stated over the past months or so in regards to Taj not giving a clear update of the project. Now, I know I said in the past on this podcast that we need to like give Taj a break, but I think we shouldn't do that anymore. I think fans should have the right to ask the questions, what is going on truly. So one out of a few came at Taj, if you want to say it like that, or asked Taj a question, and Taj decided to say, "Bet you didn't feel that way when I was one of the few public figures putting my tireless time and energy on front lines fighting for my uncle in 2019, 2020, 2021, and 2022. How quickly we forget." Okay. Then someone stated, "It's not postponed. Taj and Charles have done fairly recent interviews, and they said everyone involved is under an NDA. That's correct. All according with this fan said. Then the response to that from Charles from the MJ Cast the podcast. That's correct. That is correct. All people who have contributed to the project have signed non-disclosure agreements. Anybody who answers any question without Taj approval is in breach of contract." And then Charles responds to the fan by saying, there is obviously no obligation to be a fan anymore to anyone. There is a difference between not being a fan of someone and choosing to abuse and degrade them online, as many have done to Taj in recent days. Any alleged fan who thinks MJ would like them bullying Taj is an imbecile." Okay. Now this is coming from another fan. She stated, "All these fans need to leave Taj alone. Unless they have talked to him personally, they have zero right to pass judgment or talk ish. Y'all are annoying. He deserves absolutely none of this ish talking. He has supported his uncle his entire life. Everybody needs to zip it." Okay, here's my view. First of all, the blocking of fans is, to me, unacceptable. You have to understand something, that Michael's fans are extremely stressed and frustrated and tired of this constant trash he goes through. I know the family is tired. We get that. We see that. We are very sensitive to that. But people have given this man their money to raise money to get this pot, whatever he's doing for his uncle, completed. You could give us, there was an update he was able to give us this time last year on Michael's birthday. Last year, and he never gave us, that I know of, I don't even remember if he ever gave us that update. He never got around giving us an update. And that's, you know, there's a non-disclosure agreement we didn't know about. We found this out on Twitter. But if you listen to the MJ Cast, you would know that. I don't listen to the MJ Cast. I would like to see that on the updates, the GoFundMe updates. You know, if you donated money to the project, you get an email from GoFundMe when they have an update. And you could read the updates through the email. So, I would like to have known that on the email. I think that makes sense. Or Taj could have announced it on Twitter. That everybody signed non-disclosure agreement, so they can't talk about it without my approval. Okay, we could have known that. Communication is key. And fans have a right to ask questions about it. Saying that if someone comes at Taj, they're an alleged fan and that they're imbeciles. Yeah. And the imbecile for Taj with bullying him. Yeah, I agree. They're wrong for doing that. But
I wouldn't go and say they're alleged fans. I wouldn't go and call them imbeciles. Let's be, realistic here. These are people who are on our side. These are people that have their back. And these are people who have Michael's back. A lot of these fans, we have to keep it real and 100. I'm included in this group of fans. We are only here for Michael. We are not doing this for his family. Nobody's family will ever go through what he's been through. No one. Not his kids, not his mother, not his nieces and nephews and his siblings. None of them. And they know it. They can go ahead and live private lives. They can go choose who they want to marry without somebody interfering in their personal lives. They can have that luxury. Michael was, that was taken from him because of how his career is handled. That's just one of many examples. That's a lot he had to do. And if you think he married these women as choice, you have a lot to learn. Okay? That's just an example of you know, the stuff that he had to deal with. He did not ask for this stuff to happen to him. And when Michael's family had, had time to really get, I know that documentaries take years. I get that. I'm not trying to find anything wrong with that. But Taj had been working on this project for his uncle way more than 4 years. Okay? It doesn't take this long. You can at least communicate with them. So my suggestion with fans is to ignore it. Just let it be. When it's ready, check it out, move on. But just ignore it. Ignore what he's doing for him at this point. There are upcoming MJ projects. One stated, thanks. More filming in August is made by the fans with zero funding, but with lots of love, trying to honor Michael's project of making the documentary to his visit to Argentina that wasn't made eventually. But that was his idea at the time. So there's an upcoming documentary coming soon about his Michael's time in Argentina that he wanted to make. A fan is going to do it. And of course, Jin Chohan, as I'm recording, they're doing another fundraising for his docuseries. As I'm recording today, I am going to donate myself some money. I have donated in the past. I will continue to donate because I think this is the only documentary that's serious about what they're trying to do for Michael. What this gentleman is trying to do for Michael. So he posted this update August the 7th. I'm going to read it. Just a quick update. I felt like I wanted to clarify some things from my last update on here. I mentioned production has halted. This only means outreach for interviews has somewhat halted for the time being. The work on the documentary itself never halts, only the outreach to some extent. Researching on organizing the film, researching other documentaries, and analyzing storytelling to make the film more extraordinary along with the creating pitch material is constantly being worked on. With the help I receive, I weigh which interviews I should and can reach out to talking into account and taking into account how much it costs to do so. For example, if I want to reach out to someone who could be on the opposite side of the country, I have to be ready to interview that person as soon as possible. So I must take these factors in account when reaching out to people I need for this film. I am looking to the next step, pinch to pinch material I'm working on. I have shared a very short video of my timeline in my editing software. It gives some of an idea of what work is being done at the moment and what stage I am at creating this pitch material. Not a big update, but I wanted to clarify. And once again, you all have been amazing. Thank you. Now, that's what communication is. Communicating with people, with fans who want to know what's going on, instead of all this silence and not telling people what exactly is going on. It's not a good look. I don't want to keep on holding on to this family and what the Jacksons are doing. They do whatever they want. I am more focused on Michael's legacy. If they want to take 25 years with a docuseries, they can do what they want. We have moved on. And my suggestion is for fans to focus on people who are ready to give you the product when they're ready. Okay? And on the show notes, the link to the GoFundMe page is there. Click on it, donate. The last topic is broken down to some parts. When will the Jackson family and the MJ fans let the Presley / Cleo family go? Riley Keough interview with Vanity Fair, the MJ parts,
and MJ more love than Elvis in Tennessee. So let's start with this laughable comment from Elvis's widow, that nut job, Priscilla Presley. Can't stop running her mouth about her daughter's marriage to Michael and this comical lie. She says, "I felt like Michael Jackson used my daughter to boost his flagging career. Lisa Marie never saw him and usually didn't even know where he was. Lie, lie, lie." Okay. Let's get things in perspective. Priscilla is on the surface, a terrible mother. We can all agree. Did not build anything. She just ride on the coattails of Elvis's fame, put money in, found a way to run his empire and whatever. It's not that. It's a bunch of foolery. Michael's career was already established way before he married, even had a connection with Lisa Marie. He didn't need Lisa Marie for anything. If anything, Michael made Priscilla and Lisa relevant. People didn't even know, this is including me, that Elvis had children. When he married Lisa Marie, a lot of people didn't know Elvis Presley had children. But if you are ridiculous like Priscilla, you would think that Michael, a man who does not need Elvis Presley of anything, needed his daughter to boost his career. Yeah, he was in one of the biggest tours in the 1990s. He was all over the news, good and bad, and he had number one albums before and after Lisa Marie. I don't see how anything Lisa Marie could possibly done for Michael could have revamped his career. Priscilla is a, this is the same woman who went after her own granddaughter when she just lost her mother. Priscilla is as evil as they come, scum. And you look at someone like a Katherine Jackson who actually teamed up with her husband and created what we see icons and legends who are inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Songwriters Hall of Fame, who are inducted in Hollywood Walk of Fame by their merit alone. Not because of this or that, but because of their actual hard work. Something that Priscilla is immune to. She doesn't know what hard work is. All Priscilla knows is gathering or hanging on to someone else's fame and trying to make herself someone. This is a nut job who doesn't know what she's talking about. Now, Lisa Marie said in the past, you can pick and choose. She also said this to the LA Times. I did see the British program and it does not look like he was set up. Oh, sorry. It does look like he was set up. She responds, but no, I could never feel sorry for Michael Jackson. How about when she went on Larry King and refused to call herself a defender of Michael and said that the trial was a blessing? So, you know, I'm just posting the stuff that was out there about this individual, okay? Then the Jacksons, what they said about Lisa Marie. Joseph said Lisa Marie has a special place in Michael's heart. Okay, Joseph. And then LaToya said, when around that time Presley passed on, we miss you, Lisa. You will forever be in our hearts. I will never forget how much you shared the love you have for my brother with me. I thank you for being so honest. Rest in peace. Okay. Terrell, one of Michael's nephews, Tito's son, said, I'm saddened to hear the news of Lisa Marie's passing. My uncle would always tell my brothers and I that she often asks about us and to say hello for her. She was always so kind to the three of us, sending love to her family. Rest in peace, okay? Then Jermaine mentioned this in his ridiculous book. He said, Lisa Marie disappeared for a few days, and when she wasn't around, Michael became insecure. A vicious cycle developed. She wondered where he was, and he wondered where she was. Jealousy and distance were never a good combination in Hollywood. Okay, Jermaine, what's your makeup story? Then Todd, he was responding to an article that was probably posting falsehoods, who knows. He said, my uncle loved Lisa Marie Presley. He told me and my brothers this many times over the years. It was genuine. He felt she was his equal, didn't want his money, and could truly understand his life. This was a shameful article, and your source is a proven liar. Anyone else see a pattern? Okay, this is not to come at Taj in any way, shape, or form, but Michael probably never told his nephew that Presley was his equal. There's no way Lisa Marie was ever his equal. She was not a child star. She did not work at 5 years old. She did not have a lost childhood. Michael finished high school. She did not. Michael worked most of his life. She barely worked. We can go on and on. She didn't want his money. Well, after the divorce, didn't Michael give her $15 million? And could not, and could truly understand his life. No, she mocked his life. He was going through scrutiny. She said, oh, well, he could be making it up. Then, when she did an interview with Entertainment Tonight in 2003, she was asked, what was she thinking when she was defending Michael? She said that, you know, I wasn't thinking he put a spell on me to defend him. So, I don't know how could she truly understand his life. Lisa Marie went out of her way to call him a user and manipulator. How is that understanding his life? How did he use her? She, like her mother, also said that Michael used her for his career. He didn't need her. Now, what the other state of Michael's union, I don't care about that. Brian Oxman is a weirdo. This is what he says. He said this back in 2018. Michael was absolutely in love with Lisa Marie, and she loved him. Anyone who claims it was an arranged marriage is talking nonsense. He'll say, she understood me because she had been brought up in the Microsoft of the public eye with Elvis. After they split, he confided, I wish she was around now. When I saw her after his funeral, I told her Michael wished things had worked out differently and that she was some way in his life. The way she reacted and cried, I knew they were in love. Okay. And you can believe that. I know this guy just sparred and said a lot of weird things about Mike over the years, but whatever. Then one fan, this is what the fan said about Lisa and Michael's relationship. Honestly, I believe that Lisa was one of the most underappreciated people in Michael's life. She had the guts to say no to him and tell him what he needed to hear and what he and not what he wanted to hear. She protected him and she wanted nothing from him but his love and trust. I said what I said. Well, you can take that back because she never protected him. She called him a user manipulator. She said he put a spell on her. She said he used her for his career. He didn't need her. She never told him what he needed to hear because what does he need to hear? She was not an underappreciated people in the life. Then she also came back to be cool with the family so she can get back to Michael. Michael had nothing to do with her. So this is made up stuff coming from a fan who's obsessed with a relationship that John Branca created. Okay, then there's this other nut job who said he'd been trained to use real life as publicity opportunities for decades before he even met her. According to who? You know this because somebody said so. He really did love her. According to who? He liked her. I don't know about he loved her. I don't know about that. But he was bad in intimate romantic relationships. Lisa Perez was married 4 times. Even accused her last husband of sexually abusing his own children. So I don't know what you meant by that if Lisa Marie couldn't stay with one person. He also took advantage of the duel of Jackson and Presley to benefit his career. He didn't need Presley to benefit any career. He had an established career. He didn't need to benefit Presley. Presley was not a star ever. Her father might be a star, but Lisa Marie was not a star. She is a child of a celebrity. That's it. He didn't need these people. Bad thing, it backfired. Yeah. It backfired because it wasn't something that he planned. But you go ahead and believe the mumbo jumbo. John Branca created that relationship. So then some fan asked Jen Chohan, please consider interviewing Riley Keough for your project. I know she's very private, but we got nothing to lose here and a lot to gain. The worst thing that could happen for her is to say no. And then I responded, no offense, but for what? Let these Presley Keoughs go. I mean, what good did Michael have with these people? Move on. Jen Chohan will not interview Riley Keough because it's not needed. If anything, Riley Keough is the only person in that family that told the truth and been consistent, unlike Lisa Marie and Priscilla Presley. Okay? And some people just don't want to accept that. Some people want to accept lies. So, I'm going to read to you an interview that Presley Keough did that was released a week ago, okay? She did an interview with Vanity Fair, this is what she said. You just remembered the love, and I had real love for Michael. I think he really got a kick out of being able to make making people happy in the most epic way possible. Which one did I like better when she's asking about Graceland and Neverland? She wonders aloud. I spent more time at Neverland than Graceland. Graceland, to be honest, that was a real home, whereas Graceland was a museum in my lifetime. In hindsight, I can see how crazy these things would be to somebody from the outside, but when you're living in them, it's just your life and your family. You just remember the love, and I had real love for Michael. And she defended him in the past. She said that when she did back in 2017, Riley Keough, this is according to the New York Times magazine, and it was published or posted on HelloMagazine.com. Riley Keough has opened up, this is back in 2017, about her stepfather, Michael Jackson, and she has only fond memories of the King of Pop. I loved him. The 27-year-old granddaughter of Elvis Presley said when interviewed in New York Times Magazine. Okay. The model went on to recall splitting her time between Graceland and Michael's Neverland Ranch, which had its own amusement park and a petting zoo. There were toys everywhere, animals everywhere, kids everywhere. And she said it was like being at Disneyland all day. And this is stuff that, you know, Priscilla will never say, and those Lisa Marie Presley fans will never truly accept. Those Elvis Presley fans will never truly accept, which is that Michael looked out for Riley and Ben and their well-being. And that's really all he cared about. When it didn't work out for him and Presley, he focused on the children, rightfully so. Okay? So I'm going to give me a minute. I'm going to read to you a article from the commercial appear, and it says this is what the article says. I'm sorry, one. It just happened. Sorry, but I'm just trying to read this. Okay. Article says, Elvis dethroned. New survey claims Tennessee falling in love with the king. And the survey says Tennessee, home state of Graceland, believes that the King of Pop, Michael Jackson, was more influential than the King of Rock and Roll, Elvis Presley. That's the claim made Thursday via an email press release that arrived in the media, not dispatched as weeks ago Thursday. That arrive in the media inboxes around the state and probably around the nation, with the attention-grabbing subject line, Tennessee falling out of love with Elvis, study says. According to the press release, BonusFinder.com collected data from 3,015 Americans to determine which state loves their legendary musician the most. Participants were asked in a series of 8 questions, gauging states' love of Elvis, and as well as 4 trivia questions relating to his life. According to the results, the state that scores the highest is in his admiration of the King of Rock and Roll is Washington, home state of Jimi Hendrix, Kurt Cobain, and the Sonics, and Presley superstar pop star vocal protégé of Bing Crosby. Okay, and then we're going to get into the percentage. The survey also found that Tennesseans voted Michael Jackson as the most influential musician of all time, with Elvis in second place. The polling was close. 41.3% of Tennesseans named Elvis, but 42.7% Michael Jackson. Okay? So that's what it's saying. And you can't ignore those facts. So I'm going to end the podcast here. It's been interesting, but I hope you learned something in this podcast. We always gonna be there for Michael. We're not gonna stop. And MJ fans, don't worry about this trial. We're gonna be all right. Let's focus on what we can do for him. All right. So thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you have a great day. Enjoy Michael Day tomorrow, which we all know tomorrow the 29th would have been Michael's 65th birthday. So we're going to celebrate our king. And you all have a good day. Bye.